point.
Well, thank you for having me here from Oklahoma. I'm going to move this phone because it's on my papers. So, yes, I have 6 kids, and like Bob said, after I got them raised, I decided to go back to school and ultimately ended up with a doctorate in psychology. I went on to open a private practice, and because of my general religious underpinnings, which are pretty strong, people started coming to me and asking me to provide therapy, mainly adults, for pornography addiction, pornography use. Well, over the years, that population in age started declining and declining and declining, and I became ever so concerned about this problem in children. Well, I helped co-write Good Pictures, Bad Pictures, which is a preventative book for younger children. You may have seen that. But what I found after that is parents were asking me, where can I find a therapist to help get my kids some help for this problem? And you know, outside of Utah and a few other places like that, there really aren't people I found. And so what I thought, you know what? Parents are in the best position to help their children with problems. And so I thought, and if we can't find therapists or counselors to help these families, we need to have something for them that can be in the home. And that's why I wrote my book, Pandora's Box is Open. Now what am I going to do? So let's start with Pandora. So in the tradition of Greek mythology, you know there were two brothers, Prometheus and Epimetheus, okay? And they angered Zeus. Prometheus angered Zeus because he stole fire to give to man. Zeus stole fire to give to man. So the vengeful Zeus decided to get back at Prometheus and punished him by chaining him to a rock. But he still wanted more revenge. So Zeus then went on to offer Pandora, whom he created, the first woman to be created, and she was very beautiful, and she was bestowed with many gifts from the gods, including beauty and curiosity. So Zeus offered Pandora to Prometheus's brother, Epimetheus, to be his wife. But Prometheus said, don't accept a gift from Zeus. This is very, very dangerous. And he tried to warn him against taking Pandora for his wife. But Epimetheus was so taken by Pandora's beauty that he went ahead and married her anyway. So you're wondering, well, how did Zeus get back at Prometheus? Excuse me, Epimetheus. What happened was, as you know, Zeus gave a gift, and that's why we call it Pandora's Box. And it was really enticing. It was beautiful. Anyone would have wanted to open it. But what did he do? He told Pandora, don't ever open it. Don't open the box. Well, if I have something beautiful and somebody tells me not to open it, and especially when I'm with a child, who's not going to open it? So she did. She opened that wedding gift, and Zeus knew that hidden in that box was evil, distress, and darkness, hardship. And when Pandora opened that, it all escaped. It all escaped. But that wasn't the only thing that we know about Pandora's box. And most people don't know this, but deep inside those dark recesses was something else, and that was hope. And that was hope. And we need to remember that. Because parents whose children have started using pornography, and even adults who are using pornography, often feel very hopeless. And so I'm here, hopefully, to convey that hope and how we can use hope to help our children. Okay, I'm having to turn around here. We kind of had a setup. So the older folks in this room are going to remember air raid sirens. Raise your hand if you had air raid drills as a child. I clearly remember doing what these students are doing, getting under my desk and bending my head down and covering it and closing my eyes. And the siren would be going off, and we had these air raid drills. At the time, we were all afraid that Russia was going to attack us, drop a nuclear bomb, and decimate our country. I'm here to say, though, that I'm not as worried about forces that are without coming to harm us. I think that between pornography, and I will add substance abuse, we are going to destroy our country from within. And I believe it's happening all over the world. Okay. Customers for life. The porn industry definitely wants customers for life. Remember Joe Camel back in the day when you could still advertise for cigarettes? What was Joe Camel designed to do? To appeal to young people. There was a shoot once where one of the cigarette companies was taping a commercial for cigarettes. And I think it was the Marlboro man who ultimately died of cancer, lung cancer. I think it was him. Anyway, they were shooting the film, all the grips and the sound people and the makeup people were all watching this, and then there was a line of what I call suits. And they were watching the business executives to make sure that this shoot was going to go okay. Well, there came a break, and all the grips and the Marlboro man and all the people over here, they started using the product. Why not? So they were smoking, whereas the suits over here were not smoking. And somebody asked one of the business executives, well, why aren't you smoking? And what he said was very interesting. He said, smoking is for the young, for black, for women and the stupid. Back then, women weren't yet smoking, and black people were smarter than white people, and they weren't smoking, and neither were young people. They went after the young people because they knew they would have customers for life. I'm here to say that the porn industry is doing the exact same thing. In my practice, what I have found, the younger these men and even children have been exposed to porn and the length of time using it makes it so much more difficult to treat it and to help them master this problem. Because porn really gets hold of you. Some people say it's 100 times more powerful than heroin in the release of dopamine and giving that excitement that does get encoded in the brain. Now, interestingly enough, every adult male who has come to me for treatment has indicated that they started seeing and using porn under the age of 12. So when you see those statistics talking about that, I've verified that in my own practice. Okay. Now, the porn industry is very smart. Like I said, they are starting now, or have been for some time, to ensnare children. And I think we all know how they do that by now, that you've heard enough talks, etc., where there are keywords, there are cartoons. Did you know your kids can get, or anyone can get, porn on Pinterest? When I was looking up an image for the PowerPoint on Google Images, and the word porn was in it, I got a big surprise. Even though I know all about this, I got a very big surprise. So parents think, they don't think anything of Google. They may have filtered out words, but remember this, you can't filter out the human image. It's just, it's the industry is not good enough. It doesn't know whether a person is clothed or whether they don't have clothes on, nor what they are doing. So you can get into Google and then drop down into Google Images and then put it in. It's not in the search engine. So a big surprise, YouTube. A lot of parents don't watch what's on YouTube and keep those things secure. And so kids are getting porn from YouTube. It's just ubiquitous. So let me tell you about the Trojan horse. I like to use some analogies, and especially when I'm treating folks, older adults, teenagers, and sometimes children. So we all know that the Greek Trojan horse, say that three times, is mythical. It's fictional, but it represents a perfect metaphor for today's plague of pornography. As you may recall, the warring Greeks constructed a large, enticing wooden horse and left it outside the city of Troy. Thinking the wooden giant was a gift, its innocent citizens pulled it into their city walls. And we know what happened next. The horse held some devious Greeks who, while waiting till dark, opened the city gates. They got out of the horse, opened the city gates, only allowing the Greek army to fall upon its unsuspecting populace. Sadly, the seeming gift, just like Pandora's box, turned out to be Troy's downfall. Let me tell you another one. How many of you know who Mary Mallon is? You know who Mary Mallon is. Okay, good. In 1906, a cook by the name of Mary Mallon prepared meals for the rich and the elite. And although she was an excellent cook, she was also a typhoid carrier. Ultimately, she was dubbed Typhoid Mary wherever she worked. Because wherever she worked, she left a trail of disease, seriously ill people, some of whom died. Now, Mary didn't care about leaving behind these folks who were ill, very ill, and in fact, it would spread to the whole family, and again, some died. She didn't care. In fact, as soon as people started getting ill in the family, she'd move on and find another wealthy family to cook for. That is until she was exiled to an island and quarantined until she died. What's the similarity between that and today's pornography? Just like Typhoid Mary and a contagious disease, pornography infects the minds who come in contact with it. Now, porn's purveyors don't care. They don't care about this, just like Typhoid Mary. And so they infect the adults of minds and teens and children with pornography, and especially children who are the most vulnerable of the population. One more story. In the 1300s, merchant ships were found on shores with every sailor dead. Rats on those ships carried disease-infected fleas from foreign countries, which ultimately led to the Black Plague. Did you know that certain warring factions at the time deliberately spread the disease by dropping hosts of infected rats and fleas over city walls? Did you know that the plague killed over 50 million people just in the 14th century? And so it is with porn. I submit that pornography is our modern day Black Plague. Like infected fleas, billions of infected fleas, the porn industry is dropping it over our walls and spreading that disease, and now to our young people. Whenever there's a disease, what do we say who are the most vulnerable? Young people or the elderly people? The elderly people, kind of leaving them alone unless they have deliberately sought it out, but young people, they're catching them. Okay. We must reduce our customer base, our consumer base, until we, I don't know if I've got that. Nope. Okay. Until we reduce the consumer base. Okay. So we have to start young and reduce the people, the children who are getting addicted to these substances, and therefore we reduce the people who have gone on to be addicted to that. If we can stop it in our youth, we have a better chance of stopping it altogether. Okay, I've got too many papers up here. Okay, who likes statistics? You do. When I went back to college, I had 2 years of college, and then I went back, and the statistics course was known as the weed out course. And so past mean, median, and mode, I was a bit ignorant. And again, it was called the weed out course. If you didn't get A's in these courses, you weren't going to make it. And I opened the book and looked at that standard deviation, if you know what that is. And you can only make 100 mistakes on it by just moving one decimal or one, not understanding a Greek symbol. It really is Greek. And so I have an aversion to statistics. But some of them are very vital here. I'm not going to bore you with tons of them because I think most of you already know how big the problem is. But let's look at this one. Google Analytics found that internet searches for porn go up 4,700% when kids get out of school. 4,700%. The first time I heard this, I didn't believe it. I looked it up. I really didn't believe it. Now, 35% of children report being exposed to pornography by the age of 11, and I've seen some as early as the age of 8. Now, the next one is interesting. 71% of teens admit to blocking parents with social media, privacy settings, using private browsing, disabling parental controls, or having a male social media account unknown to parents. Using disabling parenting controls. Where do you think some of that might come from? Okay, now, I heard those statistics, but they were really brought home to me, the one about the 4,700%. And this happened actually 2 days ago. I was over at my daughter's house, and her son is in his first year of college. So I was asking him, hey, Davis, how you doing in college? And my daughter said, let me tell you something, Mom. At this Christian college, she said on parent orientation night that the school talked about they were losing bandwidth at night. It was all getting burned up after the last evening class let out. And so the school decided to look into why is our bandwidth just disappearing. And what did they find? Pornography. The students were getting into pornography. Here it is in college. Here's the interesting thing. They decided to do what they could to block the pornography, not because they thought it was wrong. And again, this is a Christian university, so they could restore their bandwidth. And kids would have to go somewhere else to get that. Now, my daughter in Texas told me, and again, this stuff is, you know, until you really experience it or hear a direct experience from someone you know, it isn't quite real. But she said she went into her public library. She takes her kids there about twice a week, and they read books, take books home, bring them back, do it all over again. Well, she was sitting in the children's area over here when they first moved there, and she happened to look over there. And I visited this library with her, so I know it's true. And over there were banks of computers, and men were on those computers looking at porn. So my daughter went to the librarian and said, "Are you kidding? You allow this in the library?" And they said, "Yes, we do. We don't censor." And she said, "Well, do you think you could move it away from the child area?" "No, this is where we have it hooked up." I wouldn't have believed it if she wouldn't have told me. So let's look at, you can count on it, our government is not going to help us. Okay, at least not yet. We're making a little bit of strides. How many of you know about the Child Online Protection Act, COPPA? Okay, a few of you know about COPPA. In 1998, it was considered law, and it was made into a federal law, and it was designed to restrict access by minors to material defined as harmful to them, specifically on the internet. Now, COPPA required all commercial distributors of material harmful to minors, of which pornography was one, to restrict their sites so kids couldn't get access to that. Anybody who was interested in this problem at the time, they were thrilled. But then what happened? When the law was getting ready to take effect, and it never did, it never took effect, because three different groups of people initiated legislation one time, second time, third time to stop this. And so who do you think that legislation or those fights, illegal fights, were coming from? Obviously the porn industry. And so COPPA, a federal law, was dismissed by the Supreme Court. A law that had been passed was dismissed, and the Supreme Court at the time said, "We will no longer hear arguments about this. So don't come asking us to enforce this." So going back to the libraries, in Illinois there was a particular library, I think in Overland. And folks in the community were concerned about pornography in the library and people accessing it. And so the American Library Association brought in their people to be at this public meeting at the library, two of whom were attorneys. And despite the public outcry, the two lawyers defended the library's right to have pornography in the library. And in fact, here's what they said. They said, when people said, "Why? They said simply, freedom of information. All information is equal, valid, and necessary for human consumption, regardless of age. And this, in this particular library, included child pornography. It is in the public interest for publishers and librarians to make available the widest diversity of views and expressions, including those that are unorthodox, unpopular, or considered dangerous by the majority. Those that are considered unorthodox, unpopular, or considered dangerous by the majority. So a very narrow slice of the population is stating no, we don't have this in our public libraries. But here's the good news. We're slowly gaining on them. So let's look at how porn harms children before we go into what we can do. So we've already talked about dopamine and how it impacts a child's memories, emotions, sense of reality. So how many of you forget your birthday? I sometimes do. Somebody will bring me some at work when their flowers were dropped off, and I said, oh, what's this for? It's your birthday, Gail. And so how many of you remember a wedding, a certain date? Christmas as a child where you got the present you really, really wanted. Anytime there's high emotion, whether good or negative, so let's say you were in a car wreck, a serious car wreck, most people are going to remember that, okay? It gets encoded. So how many times did you turn left getting here? You're not going to remember because it's inconsequential. It is not emotion laden. And so these things that have emotion attached to them, and especially those things that feel good or feel really bad, those get encoded. And on the good side, they're readily available, and we want more. Some scientists call it kindling. I look at it kind of like a path, let's say getting to the ocean. We've gone to many oceans and usually park in a lot, and there through the grasses you can see this sandy path where many people have walked there. Pretty soon it has become a path and it's easier to get to that. Or kindling. When the coals are just slightly burning and you put just a little kindling on it, the fire can start and get bigger. So kids and adults, frankly, sex feels good. So porn feels good for many folks and children who don't understand that's there. Well, when something is good, most of us want more of it. Hence some of our weight problems, because we want more and more of something that brings us pleasure. Humans don't like pain, we like pleasure. So for children whose prefrontal cortex is not developed enough to tell them, no, don't do this, this isn't good for you, of course they're going to want to go back to material that makes them feel good. So when we look at a prefrontal cortex not being developed, and sorry for the men in the room, but for women it's somewhere around 18-20-ish, and for men it can go on a little bit longer before it's not fully developed. And that's why you see men riding on tops of cars while they're going down the street, that kind of thing. So we don't necessarily have it fully embedded in our brains, what's good and not good for us, what's dangerous or not. I'll give you an example. I included in my book. I think it was about 12. And obviously my prefrontal cortex was not appropriately developed. So a male cousin of mine, somehow we found this grocery cart. And I lived on a pretty decent hill, so he and I decided to get in it and ride it down the hill. Obviously, we did not know about gravity in addition to knowing what was good for us and not good for us. So we sailed down that hill, and as soon as those wobbly wheels hit a little bit of dirt and gravel in the road, over we went. I got scratched up. My cousin, his face was torn up. His teeth were pretty mangled, all because we didn't know what was wrong. Or good and not good for us. So kids are doing the same thing. They look and they think, first curiosity, and then they think, this is going to be fun. This is good. And yet they don't know this isn't good. And it can have potential long-term consequences. Okay, so what we know also, children are developing devastating addictions to porn. And Donald Hilton, as you said, probably the premier researcher on this and neuroplasticity, is saying that a regular consumption of porn is actually starting to, we're finding out, is reducing brain size. And this is what is sadly now what I am seeing, is children are becoming desensitized to porn and its over-sexualized messages, with some going on to molest other children. And I am seeing that in my practice. I'll tell you a story about one I saw last Monday. Okay, I'll tell you about that in a minute. Alrighty, this one's a fun one. What do fake butterflies, fancy eggs, and wooden fish have to do with porn? So a man by the name of Nicholas Tinbergen, in 1973, he actually received a Nobel Prize for his work on what they call a super stimulus. And he wanted to see kind of what gets us going. Okay? So he decided to see if artificially he could use a stimulus that would change how an organism reacts. So he started out with cardboard butterflies, okay, and he painted them really pretty, kind of like that one. The lines are more defined. There are brighter colors. There's a lot of difference in the colors. And so what he did is he set those out where male butterflies are, added female butterflies, and where did the male butterflies go? To the cardboard butterfly. And even though there were females flying all around them, they were trying to mate with the cardboard butterfly. And he calls that a super stimulus. I'll tell you a little bit more about what that means in terms of porn. So he decided to do the same thing with eggs to see if birds, which eggs they would prefer to sit on. They're more plain eggs, blue or white, maybe with some marks on them, or these, again, super eggs, highly colored eggs. And what did they do? They preferred to sit on those eggs. A real visual stimulus. So we went on, and it's called a stickle-backed fish. And so those fish are attracted to females who have a red belly, okay? So what he did is he made wooden fish, and he really reddened up the belly, painted it much brighter red. And where did the fish go? They would keep bumping up against this wooden fish, trying to mate with that wooden fish. So what we learned from that, and many women whose male partners, husbands, boyfriends report, you can't compete with it. Porn is brighter in color. Okay, they don't choose ugly people to be in porn most of the time. Okay, females can't compete with that.
It's every fantasy one can even think of, and it keeps building and building and building. So once this fantasy is kind of saturated in, here's a new one, and a new one, and a new one. And humans cannot compete with that. So what is happening is in our children, and particularly males, they are developing unrealistic expectations. But porn takes, but it doesn't really give. So they don't know what intimacy is because there's not a back and forth. There's not a back and forth. So when some of these kids and teens are placed in positions where intimacy has to take a front seat, they don't know what to do. They don't know what to do. Similarly, and this is just interesting, teen pregnancy is down. You want to know why? They don't date. They do this. Dating is kind of going out of fashion. They don't get together. And so we're seeing teens with these terrible social skills. Okay. We know in adult relationships particularly that porn damages relationships. And it's just leaking down to teenagers and children. All right. Now, here are some real stories from the battlefield. I'll tell you about Erwin first. I'll just quickly go through these. Erwin came to me at the age of 13. And he had been to an aunt's house. I've changed details about this so that I don't reveal anyone. For a little vacation. Aunt and uncle went to bed. They left him in the living room with the remote. And told him, well, turn out the lights at XYZ time and go to bed. Well, here he has a remote. Well, they didn't have any filters or parental blocks on their TV, so there was Showtime and HBO and some of those things. Erwin got into a show with what you might call mild nudity nowadays. Some people would even say harmless. And this is what he told me. He went home a few days later, and just that mild bit of nudity that he had seen, he wanted more of that. So he went to a computer. Within 3 months, he was into child porn. He was into animal porn, and every kind of vile porn you can think of. Trying to unring that kind of perversion, unring that bell, I certainly wasn't successful. And my concern is that he will be a sexual predator, despite my treatment, inpatient treatment. It's scary. Brett is the one, fictionally, name I saw last Monday, and he came to me. His parents were concerned about depression and some acting out at school. So, you know, I'm going through these things with him, and he said, can I talk to you about something? And I said, yes. And I make very clear before a session and to the parents, and then they leave, everything you tell me is confidential unless someone tells me they're going to hurt themselves or someone else, or about the abuse of a child or an elderly person. So Brett starts telling me that he has fantasies. I can't use the words he used because they were so vile, and he just was blank, kind of grinning when he told me this, about having sex with women, mutilating them while this is happening, torturing them, cutting them up, and then burning their bodies. And I said, so if you wouldn't get caught, would you do this? And he said yes. And I believe him. And he went on to say, I like it when I have these fantasies, and I don't want them to stop. Now, here's the interesting thing. I tried to find him an expert. I didn't want to touch this with a 10-foot pole. I did not want to touch this. He had been having these for a very long time, and I felt he needed an expert in sex offenses, etc. And guess what? He didn't use porn. He didn't use porn. And I asked him, where did you get these ideas? Law and Order Special Victims Unit. I won't ask for hands if anyone's watched that. I used to watch it until it got more violent and more perverted to the point where I didn't want to watch that at all. And he said, that's where I'm getting them. That's where I'm getting them. So I called around in Oklahoma trying to find the best therapist I could find for him. And I found one who had a program that kind of dealt with this. And he said, well, haven't you tried to put him in the hospital, a mental health hospital? I said, I can't. You can't violate someone's civil rights unless they tell you they are going to do something and there's an intended victim. This is where society doesn't understand, like with school shootings. Why didn't somebody put him in a hospital and get them treatment? Because you can't if they don't have an intended victim. You can't. And I said, I can't. And all I can do is pray this boy doesn't act out on this someday. And my fear with the way he presented in talking to me about this is that he will. And I talked to his parents about it. He said, yeah, you can talk to him because I want help. And so I talked to them, and the father said, yeah, you know, he came to me about, it was milder, some of this. And I told him I had the same fantasies when I was a kid. And I thought, oh my, Carlton. So I'm also a forensic psychologist. So attorneys hire me to evaluate people. Some of them want to prove, so to speak, that the client is not guilty by reason of insanity. Some just want their academic, their IQ, what emotional problems they might have. Well, I always tell attorneys I'm not a hired gun. What I do is I will test the person, I will evaluate them, but what I find is what I find, and it may not be to your liking, but you're still going to pay me $5,000 to do it up front. Okay? So Carlton, I went to a jail. I spent 6 hours with him, 6 hours, clinically interviewing him, giving him tests, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He had broken into a woman's house. He had raped her. He had strangled her to death and then set the house on fire. And he'd admitted he did it. But then, of course, he was saying, well, I was hearing voices, et cetera, et cetera, which just, it wasn't true. So 6 hours with Carlton, 6 hours. And I kept waiting. Where's the remorse? Where's sadness? At least, where's embarrassment for what he did? It was a small town. It was everywhere. I didn't get anything in the way of remorse or guilt. But as I was getting ready to leave, he says, Dr. Pointer? Yes? He says, you want to know what I think about 24/7, all day, every day, all night, I think about this. And I'm thinking, finally, some redeeming quality in this man. And I said, what is it? And he said, video games. And he said, I hope there's video games in prison. And I said, are those video games violent? Yes. Are they sexual? Yes. He'd had a steady diet of sexual video games, and they are out there, combined with violence. I used to work in a prison,
and did a little bit of work on a sex offender unit. Virtually every person who was in there said before their sex crime they were using porn, and they have a long history of using porn. Okay, so let's go to what we can do about this now. So the reason I wrote this book again was because parents were contacting me and they simply didn't know what to do. And this is the reason why I think parents are also in a better position of helping their children than our therapists and other people like that. So research was done on high school students. And what they did is they completed a questionnaire that looked at their perceptions of parental warmth, control, monitoring, and knowledge about their lives. And then they followed these students. And what they found was that warmth, control, and monitoring in conjunction with knowledge about their lives, those students went on to be healthier and much less involved in sexual behaviors, in substance abuse, and criminal behavior. And the converse was true. So I'm sure you've heard about authoritative parenting versus authoritarian and passive. This also goes into school. Parents who have an authoritative, which is control and monitoring, cause and effect. If this happens, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. Those kids had much better school performance. Okay? So I decided to look at that in the context of how we can help children with pornography addiction. Okay, so what I came up with is the close plan. And the first one is calm your emotions, look at your goals, obtain information, set a course, and then engage your child. One of the mistakes that I saw parents making was that they wanted to immediately, as soon as they found out about the porn, whether it was on their phone, whether it was on a laptop, where they found this, too many of them wanted to go immediately and confront their child. Well, most of us would know how that would work, and not very well. So the first thing I try to teach parents is calm your emotions. Because if you approach it with a great deal of anger, with a great deal of embarrassment, how are we going to look to other people if we say, this is hopeless, I don't know what to do about this anymore? Okay? It pushes children away. Okay? Now, parents do report feeling ashamed, embarrassed, angry, hopeless. And all of those feelings are normal. We just have to work on calming those down before we even think of addressing our children about this. The next one is, that was calm your emotions. The next one is look at your goals. And so what I ask parents to do, and this is kind of in conjunction with taming your emotions and calming those down, is look at your goal. What is it that you want to accomplish? Do you want to push the child's porn use underground? Do you want to shame them? Do you want to blame them? What is it is your goal? Usually when we look at it that way, parents say, no, that's not my goal. I don't know how to go about this, but that's not my goal. And so we look at, is your goal to show your child you still love them and use your relationship with the goal in mind of helping the child stay away from porn? And what I have found is that is the best approach. So I try to teach the parents acting versus reacting. I don't know if you can see this very well. Okay? Acting is thoughtful and slow. It's based on knowledge and it's planned. It's working together. That's acting, okay? But reacting is impulsive and fast. we're going to take care of this right now. It's based on emotion. It's based on, most parents report, if they're spanking their children, they report to me. It's always based on their emotion, not what was done. Shoot from the hip. I know how I'm going to handle this. I have all the information. And then dictating, this is what's going to happen. Parents need to understand that, looking at your goals. If I go at this in a calm, knowledgeable manner, I have much more chance of success. So then I help parents look at, I don't know, again, if you can see this, the anger and shame approach and the calm and informed approach. So these are what I call cost-benefit analyses. So if I say those are really cute shoes, would you pay $1,000 for them? What would you say?
No.
Why not?
Because I would never pay $1,000 for any kind of shoe.
That's not worth it, right?
Yeah.
That little bit of fabric and leather is simply not worth it. And I try to teach parents that, okay? High costs and low benefits are the anger and shame approach, and low costs and high benefits for the calm and informed approach. I don't have time to go over all of these today. If you happen to take a look at the book, you'll see them more fully there. Okay. Okay, this is obtain information. Too often, have you ever bought a new car and you just get in there and start driving, and then you're wondering, how do I work the radio? How do I, where are the link, where's everything? Okay, I did that once and I didn't know what I was doing. I even tried to put the seat back and I couldn't find where the bar was. I couldn't even figure out how to open the gas tank. Okay, we need information to be successful in virtually almost everything we do. Okay, so I teach a two states of mind model. The left side of the brain is typically pretty logical, okay? It's fact, it's evidence, it's senses based. I know this is here because I can see it. If I wanted to, I could taste it, I can hear it. We use the senses to validate something. Now, just as an aside, I find stereotypically that men tend to stay a little bit more on that logical side of the brain than do women. The other side, frankly, it's just emotion. There's no other way to describe it. And we run the gamut of emotion. When I'm trying to teach kids about using some of the logical side of the brain while acknowledging the emotion, I'll say, now, how about Mr. Spock? And they look at me and they say, what? And I say, you know, Mr. Spock, he had no emotion. They don't know what I'm talking about. And most of you, I think, do. You're old enough to know what I'm talking about. You give him a present and he says, what's this for? Okay. So, once they understand these states of mind and how they work together, I try to teach them, when you see this Venn diagram, okay, they're actually supposed to be flipped a little, but so the logical side, it's over here on the right side accidentally, pornography is harmful. I don't want to be addicted and have porn control me. With help, I can stop. I can count on my dad or whomever to help me. Those are logical thoughts. Over on the other side is emotion. Porn feels good. If all we do is lecture to our kids, porn is bad, 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 and they're thinking with their minds that are underdeveloped, that prefrontal cortex, they're saying, no, it's not. So we have to not acknowledge that. That's the emotion. Porn feels good. And maybe saying, I can't stop using pornography. I just can't stop. It's hopeless. When we combine using the logical and emotional side of the brain, I say in the middle we get wisdom. Pornography feels good, but that doesn't mean it's good for me. Okay, it draws in logic and understanding of the emotion. And from there, that amount of wisdom, we can go on.
So this one is obtain information again. Now the five W's. Okay. I say who, what, where, when, and why. If we as parents, if we can try to get that information before we talk to the children, who? Is there someone exposing our children to pornography? Is this happening at a friend's house? Is this happening with peers? Is it happening at school? And yes, even though some schools try to filter it out, kids are amazingly adept at getting around it. Is it at the library? Is it at McDonald's? When parents think they've put the blocks on their server at home, you know, for the phone connection in, and they think, oh, that's going to work. Well, they can go to McDonald's if they have an internet-enabled phone and get it there. And get it there. Okay. So if we can try and identify who may be exposing the children to pornography, we have something in our favor, because that may be something we can control. Maybe. Okay? What? On what device are they accessing porn? Typically it's phones. Okay? Typically it's phones. I saw another boy I'm treating for a pornography addiction, and it's not going well. And the reason it's not going well is his parents will not preclude access. They say they're going to. So he had a smartphone. I said, okay, you've got to get a phone that just is a phone. Maybe texting, but a phone, no internet accessible device. Next time he comes, he has a new phone. And I said, you can't get on the internet, right? No, I can, but they block it at home. And I had already explained to the parents exactly what that meant. So I sent him home. Okay, guys. I looked online. I say they're called dumb phones. I can't remember who makes them. Dumb phones. And they're cheap, like $39. All they do is make calls. I send home a printout of that and say, let's do that. Next week he comes back. I said, how well did you do on accessing porn? One, he still has the phone. And his father is saying, we need to buy him a smartphone because I can figure that one out in blocking porn, but I can't figure out this phone. Okay? All right. The next week he comes back. I said, how'd you do on this thing? He still has the phone, but he says, although I told the parents, he cannot play video games. Okay? He cannot play video games. He found the controllers that his parents had hidden. Okay? The next time he comes back, and I'd ask parents, everything is to be passworded and locked up at night. No kid needs a phone at night, especially an internet-capable one. He still had the other phone, and he had gotten his brother's iPad and accessed porn. So what did I do? I told the parents I will no longer see him because you are not motivated in helping your child master this problem. Okay. So when are they viewing porn? Okay? Is it at night? Is it after school with the other in that percentage of 4,700%? Is it at that time? When are they doing this? The time of day? Because that can help. Obviously, if a child is using porn and they're coming home and they are unsupervised, the parent has to do something else. Take the laptop to work. Okay, they can do the homework when you get home. Okay, so when is really important. If we find out it's at school, we have to go and look, what can we do about that? And many schools now want you to have a tablet for school work. And one mother complained to me, well, now they have to get on the internet on this tablet, and they're making us buy one for them. So
also another school problem. Okay, again, where? Home, library, school, friend's house. I beg parents, please do not let your children go for sleepovers. None of my children will let my grandchildren go for sleepovers. I can't tell you how many women and men and children have reported to me that's where they were sexually molested, or that was where they had exposure to porn. Not every parent may be the same as we are in blocking these things. Some parents say when a kid comes over, the devices go in a basket. When you leave, we'll give it back. No devices in our home. No devices. So where is very important. So why? The why is kind of difficult. So why are they getting into porn? Well, the porn industry is targeting them, okay? Another one, they have a lot of curiosity. Some kids are reporting that their peers do it. In fact, girls and guys, they're sexting these inappropriate pictures back and forth. Well, you're going to be the one that says, no, I'm not going to see this. So some of it's peer pressure, curiosity. Some stumble on it. There are many whys out there, but it may help us to know. Boredom is a huge one. Boredom is huge. Okay. Now, set a course. Okay, I don't know why that's at the top. It's funny. Okay, so now we're starting to learn some principles that we taught the parents and apply them to the kids. So again, acting versus reacting. So when we're teaching a child not to use porn, acting, I'm going to have to think about what I need to do based on knowledge. I can get addicted to this stuff. Planned. I'll use my stop plan, which we'll teach in a minute. Reacting is turn on my phone and download it right now. Based on emotion, porn makes me feel good. No planning as to what to do if that porn appears. No planning as to what to do. We've got to plan. Okay? So then, and all these principles I use because there's no research that we can say if a treatment is effective or not effective, because we can't expose kids to porn and then give them a program and see, well, can you stay away from it? It's ethically impossible. So, but I use sound scientific psychological principles when I wrote this book. Thinking errors. Okay, thinking errors such as rationalization, justifying, minimizing, and blaming. Rationalizing, justifying. Everybody looks at porn, it's just part of growing up. Minimizing, it's not hurting anybody, it's no big deal, it's just pictures. Blaming, if my parents didn't want me to get into this, then they should have put filters on. It's the porn industry's fault. It's the school's fault. It's somebody's fault, my friend's fault. Now, the thing about thinking errors is we've all got them. If I'm late to work, my thinking error is, but I've got a patient and they're waiting for me. So that somehow justifies and allows me to speed. Okay, it's incorrect, but it's a thinking error, and most of us have them. So barriers that protect, and there's a lot of them for them. Some of us, we're not going to speed because we've already gotten 3 tickets and they're going to take more money away from me. They may even take my license. Okay, if I see someone's purse over here and there's money in it, I'm not going to steal it once it's just morally wrong to me, but somebody who might be invested in doing that, or the barriers that protect us from not doing it, I would be really embarrassed if I got caught. Really embarrassed. I would feel ashamed. I would feel guilty. All those things are barriers that protect. So we try to combat thinking errors with the barriers. In this case, porn can be addictive just like a drug. I'd be embarrassed and ashamed if I got caught. My parents would be disappointed in me. It can harm my relationships. It's not just pictures. These are real people. They may look happy, but many of them say they feel used and bad about themselves. My behavior is under my control. My control. Those are barriers that can help mediate those thinking errors. Stop, think, open, and proceed. So stop what we're doing when we're tempted to get into porn. Think about what I'm doing. Open our mind and remember the things we've learned, and then proceed with our plan. I'm sorry, I can't go over all of these, or I'll just, everybody will fall asleep. Okay, so then, costs and benefits of using pornography. I usually will ask the child, would you pay $1,000 for those shoes? And they tell me no. They say why? It's not worth it. Okay, so when looking at the costs and benefits of using porn, costs. I will no longer have the good feeling that pornography gets me. Okay? All right? So there are costs for stopping things, even though they're bad. People who say, you know, that they're stopping smoking, there's a cost. They start feeling nervous. They don't feel as calm. I will be curious, and it will be difficult to stop my curiosity. And this is something I'll have to work hard at. Those are costs, okay, of stopping. But the benefits, I won't be addicted and rely on pornography to make me feel good. I'll be able to pay attention to many other things that interest me. I'll feel stronger knowing that I can control my own mind and body. I'll have healthy attitudes about sex and will develop coping skills to help me throughout my life. Now, these are things, ultimately, that parents and the child work on together so that you can go in an age range that is specific to your own child. They work together on that. And I have blank forms in my book so that parents can do this. Okay, moving along. All right, what I ask parents to do is after they have calmed their emotions, looked at their goals, and gone through this process, we go to E, engage your child. But before we do, there's actually a checklist I have in my book for parents. I've calmed my emotions. I understand that neither myself nor my child are to blame. I've looked at my goals and identified the goals that will best help my child. I understand that I want to act, not react. I have obtained as much information as possible by researching the W questions. I have read and understood the two states of mind model. I have read and understand the thinking errors versus protective barriers model. I am prepared to discuss the cost-benefit method with my child. I am prepared to discuss the stop pornography method with my child. So we actually have a checklist for parents that say, I don't want to move forward until I have these things done. Okay, so in my book, I actually have the parent or parents who are going to be discussing with their child do a pornography discussion script. Okay, before I came here to talk, I have a kind of a script, and I practice it, and it's written out, and I look at it as I proceed. I ask parents and their guidance with each question what their script is going to be. So when it's actually written down, we're probably going to remember it a little bit more. Okay. The next one is a little bit the same, and it's called My Action Plan, and it's for the parent. My child has access to porn on these devices. My child has access to porn at these places and times. To limit physical access to porn, I will. When I recognize that my child is struggling with resisting pornography or struggling with inappropriate coping techniques, I will. I will set a positive example, bye. I will encourage safe internet use in our home, bye. And so forth. So that you know what you are going to contribute to resolving this problem. Then the next one is sitting down with the child and developing an action plan. Okay? Approaching it in a loving and warm way. I've noticed you have a problem with this. I love you. I'm going to help you. It's not healthy for you to be looking at this. We approach in a loving way. If we come across with negative emotion, we push them away and they're less likely to learn. I'll let you look at that if you want to just look through my book so that you can see. I don't know what my time is. What's that? I'm over? It's 4:30? Okay. Let me do really quickly. How sexualized is your home? Okay, what are books, magazines, videos, TV, what kind of cable things you allow in your home? How do you dress? Are doors closed for privacy? If you take a careful look at our homes, we might find that even our homes are sexualized and our children are learning from that. Okay, so in terms of what's in your child's box, I cannot tell you strongly enough, preclude access while they're learning to manage this problem. And I don't go into a lot in terms of filters because they change all the time. Find a reputable person and learn. And do not think that one filter will resolve everything. And don't think you can install a really good one and think it will go on forever and ever. Porn industries find a way to get around these filters. They go out of date and there's upgrades. Okay, now remember, the porn industry hires the best computer minds and they're working overtime to ensure your child has access to pornography. We think of these slimy people in back rooms. These guys, this industry hires highly, highly intelligent people to get this stuff on computers and avoid filters. And they legislate highly. Okay? Pandora's box can be closed. Knowledge, love, warmth, and relationship are powerful. Talk early and talk often. This is a process, not an event. If you have any questions, now that I've burned up all your time, I'm happy to answer them. Yes? Groups like this. Groups exactly like this. Write your representatives. Come to groups like this. Contribute. It starts small. NCOSC is a powerful group. Keep track of them and what they're doing. They have simple things that you can punch on here and sign this petition. Okay? All right?
In the way of discussion, it might not be a question, but you talk about talk early and talk often, and I just want to recommend, we don't have these for sale. You can get them on Amazon, but there's ways to, you know, it's hard to have these sex talks really early, but you don't have to talk explicitly about all the birds and the bees. There's good pictures, bad pictures, Junior, and good pictures, bad pictures. This was the original book.
Speaking of sale, are you going to be available?
I have. It always embarrasses me to do that. It's not my goal to make money, but it'd sure be nice to pay off what I put into that thing. But I've reduced them to $10 when I go places. I just reduce those. So.
You had something to do with this book.
Yeah, I co-wrote that, and it was after that book that I started getting calls saying, well, who can I go to help me?
I'd like to get it back to could I tell a couple of horror stories? I was at the Tops to Teens Expo and had one of our exhibit tables, and I had three different people come up to me and talk about situations they had observed in their own homes. Just to give you an idea how young kids are getting exposed to this stuff. They're getting it from teenagers, they're getting it from older siblings, neighborhood kids, libraries. One mother came up and said, my six-year-old and my four-year-old were fighting. The four-year-old girl was aggravating her older six-year-old brother, and the brother finally says to her, when I get my cell phone, I'm going to take pictures of your naked ass, and I'm going to send them to your enemies.
at 6 years old. Another mother told me about her six-year-old was typing in on the home computer www.sex.com. 6 years old, they can barely spell. She says, honey, why are you doing that? And he says, well, I can't get further, Mom. I need the password. She said, well, why do you want this? He said, I want to see pictures of naked ladies. He already knew that's what he wanted at 6 years old. And then a school counselor told me about the elementary school where she was working and how the boys and girls are sending sexting pictures back and forth, and they're having oral sex in the bathrooms. So the counselors are finally getting to the point where they need to address this, and that is why we wanted to have a presentation along these lines. A young boy went with his dad to the hearings that we were having in Annapolis where we were trying to get this to be the resolution to be passed about the public health crisis. And it was seventh grader with his dad. The dad admitted he had had pornography problems. He might have, you know, it might have been in the home when the boy was originally exposed. But in any case, the boy gave his testimony about in the seventh grade cafeteria, the kids were sharing with their cell phones what these explicit pictures were all about. And they would, you know, he said he had guys come up to him saying, what's the kinkiest picture you have? And they were showing each other. And he, you know, he tries to be brave. He tries to be the only kid to say, you know, that stuff doesn't interest me or it doesn't turn me on or whatever. But it's, you need to have these conversations early is all I can say. And, you know, utilize these resources we're trying to make available to people.
I will tell you, our local school is local high school. My grandchildren came home and told me this, and then it was also in the news. The school was limiting access to the internet to certain times during the day in classes and not having it, say, at lunchtime and other times. So one boy in the school gathered a whole bunch of sexting pictures from girls, primarily throughout the school, because a lot of them were sending them. And he sent a few to the administration and said, if you don't open the internet up on lunchtime and these other times, I'm going to send out all these pictures. All these pictures. Well, they shut the internet down totally, and they caught the boy and prosecuted him.
Anybody else have another question?
The organization you said to keep an eye on,
the NCOSE.
The National Center on Sexual Exploitation.
Excellent, okay. Excellent organization. They're probably one of the biggest out there. Oh, and I want to correct, I'm not helping Australia with legislation. I'm helping e-childhood and culture reframe in Australia writing their parent program that they're putting out and will go to several countries to be used in their schools.
Anybody else with a question?
One of the things that we've done in our church, not so much a question, but one of the things we've done is we've established a mini-master, maybe just 3 weekends or 3 weekends, where all the Sunday school classes address the issues of my own. And to deal with, it goes along with this, the sexual abuse that children are going through, and they are indeed going to their parents, and they're going to authorities, and they're saying, this is happening to me, like the gymnast, you know, and people weren't believing them for 12 years. And we're saying, okay, you need to set up a code word or a code signal that you can use with your child, that you and your child are the only ones that know it. Maybe it's the word clown or something. And if the child is feeling threatened by somebody who's abusing them and they're in the home with the parent and the child says, Daddy, this is a clown, then the family knows the child's talking about this person. They're trying to give them the power to speak up and be believed.
Yeah.
Talk early.
Yeah. Talk early. A couple other books I'd like to mention. Noah's New Phone. story about using technology for good. I'd say this is probably, I don't know, third grade level, maybe a little younger, that you can use. And Petra's Power to See is about media literacy, to really be able to detect what advertisers are trying to do to suck the kids in, so they can sort of start weighing the fact that, you know, people are using me.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, why don't we just give Dr. Poynter a round of applause. And